って。
Hey guys, welcome to the Freelance Podcast. I'm going to keep this intro pretty tight, pretty short here. I actually interview Nathan Alate, fellow freelancer based out of Houston in Texas, and we talk about how he got into freelancing and all that fun stuff. And we also talk about pricing. Pricing is something that I think a lot of freelancers struggle with, especially at the beginning, and it's something we're always unsure of. But Nathan gives a few great pointers in there, so make sure you stick around, listen to all that fun stuff. There's going to be links in the show notes for everywhere that you can find him, so make sure to check that out, rjmccollum.com/podcast, and you can take a look at the episode there. As always, guys, you have any questions, make sure to reach out to me or Nathan, and we'll make sure to get you guys all taken care of. And without further ado, here is my talk with Nathan Alate.
Well, yeah, I'm Nathan, Nathan Alate. Yeah, a lot of people kind of get tongue twisted on that, but it's Alate. But no, I've been freelancing since about 2009. What happened was I really was playing around with the Adobe suite, and I realized, oh, you can edit these things, edit pictures, you can edit audio, you can build websites with this stuff, and people will pay you for it. Cool. How can I get more ingrained in this? How can I learn how to use these tools so maybe I can figure out a way to make some extra money? That was the thought I had. So I pretty much used Google, found different tutorial sites that were on the internet and tried to go through them. I think because at the time I was working for the school I just graduated from, Baylor University, and I think I was able to get a free copy of the Adobe suite.
Nice.
So I was like, well, let me learn as much as I can before I'm not here anymore. And I was just going through the tutorials. I was trying to go through step by step on how do you edit a photo, how do you use Illustrator, how do you use Photoshop, and just walking through step by step on how to do that. And I got to the point to where I felt confident to recreate certain effects without looking at the tutorial.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing about the Adobe suite. You really just have to learn where things are so you can use the tools effectively.
So what did you, so you mentioned that obviously you went to Baylor. What did you go to school for? Was this kind of just really off to the side in terms of what you were planning on doing with your life? Or was this somewhat related to what you went to school for and what you wanted to do?
Yeah, definitely. It wasn't directly related because I went to school for electrical and computer engineering because I liked building things. I liked taking something that doesn't exist and making it a reality. That was the real point that I liked about it. Learning all this stuff seemed kind of artsy. I didn't know if there'd be a place for it or not. I just thought it was cool. So that's really what gravitated me towards it. And I liked learning new things. But just a quick step back. I even mentioned this on my website, different places. I got caught up in what I would call the next step because, you know, you go to high school and then the next step is, I guess I go to college, and then you go to college and what's the next step? I guess I'll go to grad school.
Yeah,
I guess something like that. And I was always looking for the next step. So in college, I was even thinking, let me finish my degree and get a job. I wasn't necessarily thinking of what can I learn that's a skill that can get me value. I wasn't thinking like that. I was just, let me get a 9-to-5 job like everybody else.
Yep.
So when I was learning the Adobe suite, it was purely on the side. And I thought there might be a place for it later just because not everybody can use it.
Right.
But I wasn't thinking of business. I was just trying to learn it. So when I did learn Photoshop, I said, oh, okay, I can recreate things on my own. And then I stumbled upon, oh, you can build and design websites in this thing.
Yep.
Oh, cool, cool. And then you slice certain pictures and you do the web. They don't even do that anymore. But that was my thought.
I remember the slicing days.
True, true. So that was my thought. Oh, this is cool. So then I said, okay, let me look into HTML. But right at that point, I left my job at Baylor University and I got a job working at a web hosting company.
Nice. Are you allowed to say which one?
You can figure it out. It's a big web hosting company in Houston. It's similar to GatorHost, maybe something like that. Okay. Something like that. It might be something similar.
If only we could connect the dots there. I used to work for GoDaddy, so I know what it's like to work at a company like that.
Okay, so yeah, obviously we used to be enemies. We didn't even realize it. We were competing enemies, but now it's all good. We're freelancer friends.
Yeah, so. There you go.
But no, I was working there and. A lot of smart people at that company, and I did everything for that host, from support to a little bit of server administration to dealing with customers. So I learned all of the technologies that were out there.
Yeah.
And people kept asking questions that wasn't common knowledge. So that's when I really had the thought, Nathan, you already learned the Adobe suite. Now you've learned things like WordPress, Drupal, and how to build a website. You need to provide some value on web design, turn this into a business because people keep asking questions and they're not getting answers. So that's when I saw the opportunity.
So how did you transition then? You know, obviously you had your education, you were kind of looking for that next step, but obviously it sounds like you started to kind of piece some of the side things you learned together and realize, hey, I could do this. Like at what point did you step out and actually attempt to be a freelancer? And just in the sense of not a full-time freelancer, but like, I'm going to do that. It's not my job to do this, but I'm going to see if I can get some work doing this.
Yeah, definitely. Some friends knew that I was, hey, Nathan knows about technology. They knew that. They knew I was learning the Adobe suite and I was just playing around, doing my own thing, whether it's making graphics or going to websites and saying to myself, can I recreate this website or at least the framework of it? So I was doing that work. And I shared that with a couple of people and they were familiar with it. So lo and behold, somebody just asked one of my friends, hey, you know anybody that knows about websites? And they were like, hey, Nathan works at a web host and he knows tech stuff. I'll just ask him.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be honest, I was a little intimidated to take on the project. They wanted, it was for a, I think it was, they're having a seminar and they needed a website and a flyer. So a flyer to promote the event, but the website that was centered around the information they were teaching at the seminar. And I was a little intimidated, but I thought to myself, you know, I don't know everything, but I know more than them.
Yeah.
Also, I can probably figure this out. I mean, even if I don't know it, I can Google, I can ask people, I can figure it out. So I took on the job. They asked me what price to charge. I don't know. I didn't know what to say. I made something up.
Do you remember how much you charged?
I think for the flyer, I said like 50.
Nice.
Unfortunately, I didn't put a revision cap on that. I just said $50 sounds good. And they had many revisions, which
you probably did at least $1,000 worth of work.
It wasn't worth it, but I didn't know that. I just said 50, right? Because this is not my job. This is my side hustle. So I said, okay, 50. I think for the website, it was 500.
That's not bad for like a first deal.
There was I bit off more than I can chew because I could build the site with WordPress, thank God, but WordPress. But still, they had many different changes. And hey, can you edit this? Can you do this? Yep. That included not only setting up the website, but the graphics that were on the website too.
Yeah.
So even though 500 sounds pretty good, looking back on that. I was giving away too many things.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
But it was my first client, so I was using that somewhat as a benchmark. So I learned a lot in that. And when they actually paid me money, because I set up a PayPal at that point, but they paid me money, I said, I'm finally a professional. Someone paid me for my services. Now I could at least get a similar client or other clients. So that's pretty much when I would say, I'm a freelancer now. That's when I really started thinking, let me formalize this as a business.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. We've all learned, especially those first clients, we've all learned the hard way that the price that we gave, we way undercut ourselves. I mean, I remember back in the day I was doing sites for like $100, $200. And I mean, they were they were basic sites and just HTML and CSS. But like, yeah, you don't think about things like revisions or even just explaining what a revision is. Because a revision is so vague and can be interpreted differently by whoever is, you know, making their own definition of it. So that's obviously how you kind of got started and everything. At the moment, I don't even know this. I mean, we've only chatted back and forth a little bit on Twitter. You know, I've listened to your stuff a little bit. Are you, is this what you do full time, or do you have a job and you're still moonlighting as a freelancer?
I'm changing a lot of things about my business as it stands today. I would say moonlighting as a freelancer. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that I saw is from that point, and I'll just fill in the gaps a little bit. From that point, working at the web host, I was freelancing on the side and just learning new things. So I just kept doing that. Then I was still on the whole next step track.
Yeah.
Because while I was at the web host, I said, you know what? I don't really think they value all of my skills. Maybe I can do something to learn a little more. Because I had all technology-based background. I didn't really have any marketing or business. Because mm-hmm. you can build a website, but how do you get people there?
Right.
What makes people buy? Those are the questions I really didn't have in my past education. So I did go to grad school to get my MBA. So I had too many things going at once, but I was working at the web host, I was freelancing, and I was going to class yeah. at night pursuing my MBA and trying to apply any and everything I learned in my MBA to at least my personal business. So if my job didn't care what I had to say of what I learned, I said, well, that's okay. I'll just build it up myself
yep.
and use it in my own business. So that's what I was doing. And I started to see certain things I needed to set up. So the whole time I worked, and even today I'm still working, but it's because I came to a realization. I'm actually in a transitionary phase right now. And what I mean by that is, even though I worked on the side as a freelancer and have a number of different projects, I wasn't necessarily setting myself up to have the type of clients that I really would like
yep.
going forward. I was just taking work that I would say, oh, I can do that, or yep. That's not too hard. I'm familiar with that. Mm-hmm. So those are the type of clients I was taking on, but I wasn't looking at a certain type of clients, you know, the type of clients that say, oh, how much for a website? 10,000? Oh, that's inexpensive.
Yeah.
Those people exist out there. But this is also something I realized in grad school, and I was a little surprised by it. I went to University of Houston for my MBA. It's a pretty good MBA. Houston is not just an oil and gas town. They have a good health sector, and they have a good technology sector as well. So my professors consulted with people on a number of different ways with that. But I noticed all of my professors, you know, they're making about 100K teaching,
yeah.
you know, little chump change, right? 100K. They all had some type of side hustle.
Yep.
One of them was a park ranger.
That's pretty different.
And he made 60K being a park ranger, but he was a professor. Another one did consulting. I even worked with him on some freelance project. He mm-hmm. did consulting, but he taught as well. Another one would teach, and when the summertime came, they would go consult for, you know, and get, you know, 80K from a client or something like that. So I said, wow, maybe it is possible to still work and, you know, be fulfilled as a freelancer, but you have to have the right type of job. For them, being a teacher gives them the flexibility. If they don't have a class, they can go do whatever they want. So I started looking for a type of job that was more fitting for that. Because I'll be honest, I mentioned school and grad school. I have debt from that.
Yeah.
So just as a quick sidebar, if you have debt, you can definitely still freelance and you can definitely still overcome that. However, whatever you can do to reduce the amount of debt you have or not have any debt, it'll make the transition to be full-time freelance a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Because I will admit, if I didn't have debt, I would have already fully taken the jump and said, I'm going to freelance full time. Yeah. But because the debt is there, I want it gone before I do that. So that's just something I have going on. But the job I have now, I'm doing digital marketing for a Fortune 500 company here in Houston. There's a lot more flexibility.
Yeah.
A lot more flexibility. As long as I get my job done, I can kind of make, you know, do what I want.
Yeah.
So that type of job is important. If you have a 9-to-5 tool, you have to be there. You have to be at the desk. You have to answer the phone. Can't really do much with that. But if you have a job that provides a little more flexibility,
I'm going to push back on that just a little bit. Because for I've only just crossed the 2 year mark of being full time freelancer, and so I started freelancing in 2008. Giving stuff a shot, and pretty much the entire time up until the end of 2013, I had a full time job. I bounced around from job to job. I had a couple, but one of them, I worked in a call center for AT&T. So that's literally, you have to be there these hours and you're always in front of the phone. There was no chance of anything personal. And the job I had before I left, to go full time, was I was director of customer service at a web agency. And so there was more flexibility in the sense that, you know, I wasn't like, always my calls weren't being monitored or anything like that, but it was definitely you need to be here, you're running a department, and a lot of times I needed to be there longer than just your normal 9 to 5. It 100% helps, in my opinion, to have a job where you have flexibility. Obviously that's a big one. I think flexibility while you're at the office, being able to work in a company that is similar to what your freelance side hustle is, that played a big part in getting me closer to full-time, because I think you can probably agree with this, that you're probably learning a lot doing digital marketing for this Fortune 500 company. So you get the benefit of learning on the job for something that will directly impact your freelancing side of things. But at the same time, the reason I said I just had to push back a little bit, I think it's the mindset. I think a lot of people don't have the right mindset when they're moonlighting as a freelancer. It's easy to do kind of the odd job here and there, but I think that I think from what I've heard you say, and I know in my experience working on the side, a lot of it is flexibility helps, but you have to have that drive. You have to have, you know, maybe in your case, it's that, you know, that next step you're working towards, that going full time. So that's what drives you. But a lot of people, they don't work as hard. Okay, let me back up so I stop rambling here. I think it's really easy to use a job as an excuse as to not be doing something or not having the time as a freelancer. I know what it's like to have a demanding job, have a family, have a small child, where the pressures of all that is on you. But I remember all the time, and especially in the earlier episodes, you know, I talk about you'd work all day and then you come home and you go right back to work. But this is the work, the second part of work that you enjoy doing. That's what pushes you forward. And I think if you have that sort of mindset, the job doesn't necessarily matter, but it certainly helps to have a job where you can be flexible, whether that's hours, whether that's being able to work on your own stuff in office, which, you know, depending on what you do is possible. But a lot of it, I think, comes down to mindset and being, you know, one of the hardest things of being a freelancer is it's you. It's just you, you know? I mean, you know, Nathan has to decide what Nathan is going to do and spend his time on. Nathan has to decide when it's Friday night and his friends want to go out, you know, if he's going to work to finish this project or if he's going to go out with his friends. And I mean, you know, that's kind of somewhat of a drastic idea there, but in the end, I think that's what it boils down to. Job plays a little bit in it, but I think a lot of people use the job as an excuse, and not implying that that's you at all, because you're clearly working hard. Honestly, you're one of the reasons that I decided to pick my podcast back up, because I saw the content. Wow. I saw the content you were putting out, both obviously you do video too. That's I watch you on YouTube. So that takes a lot more work than sitting behind a mic and hitting the record button and editing a couple ums and ahs out. So, all that to say that, job flexibility definitely helps the transition, but I think a lot of it comes down to mindset.
No, I'm glad you said that. And that is true, because some people have even told me when they're working full time for themselves. I literally just met with a client who I actually kind of was like, you need to quit your job, but I guess I should take my own advice. But, and they finally took the step of doing that, but they came back and said, you know, it's difficult because if I want to live, if I want to eat, if I want to thrive, it's just me. I have to take the steps to do those things. No one is going to make me or coach me, or there's no threat of being fired.
Yep.
For some type of motivation. It's literally you have to get out and make your own income. So, no, I'm definitely with you on that. And that's something that people need to be careful of, because you can work at a job and you say, oh, when I save up this amount, I'll quit. Or if I get this amount of experience, I'll quit. And then you look up and you're like, wow, I've been at this job 4 years and yep. I still have not accomplished the goal that I wanted to accomplish. So I definitely have my goals in mind. I wrote them down to make them a reality. And I'm definitely making sure I'm moving towards those things, because one thing that multiple people have shared with me is, you know, if you don't feel led to make the jump full time, that's okay. But the people that have made the jump, they were like, man, I have so much more time to do what I would like. I could actually say no to things, right? Sometimes you work and certain things are brought to you and you can't necessarily say no. Mm-hmm. You have to do them. Even if you don't agree with the project, you have yep. to do it. So they have more freedom to say yes. They have more freedom to say no. They do get nervous about income from here to there, but they're literally generally more happy than when they were at a company. So just some things to think about.
I'll echo that 100%. When I made the jump to full-time freelancing the year before, and again, you know, I was the main breadwinner for my family. So it wasn't just me, you know, I had a family, I had a young daughter. And the year before, I had only made $15,000 in freelancing. We had only 3 months of our bills paid, which is a very small runway. Mm. And I quit my job. And, you know, here I am 2 years later. But obviously, once you've kind of gone through it, and I'm still going through it, but once you've gone through it, it's easier to look back and say, oh, man, I wish I would have done this sooner. That's why and a lot of people, it's not like I came up with the term, but the term jump, you know, it's absolutely a leap of faith in yourself.
True.
Because,
true.
You know, here I am not proving that I can make enough money doing what I was doing on the side to support me and my family and, you know, live the life that we want to live, instead of just scrounging by. And we only had 3 months of our bills paid, and 3 months is not a very long time, but here I am saying, you know, telling my wife, like, I think it's time to quit my job. Now, I was very lucky. My wife was super supportive. She wanted me to quit a long time ago. So that was a big help. But yeah, looking back, it's there's so many upsides. I work from home. I don't work in a co-working space or anything like that. And I think that there's definitely days where I want to sit down and just play Call of Duty all day. but it doesn't work that way. You know, you gotta sit down and in front of the monitors and, you know, knock some stuff out. But I would say absolutely that I am way more happy. And the ability to say yes and no. Luckily I'm in a place work wise that I get to say no. It's not like, crap, how am I going to pay this month's bills? You know, yes, you need a, you know, custom e-commerce shop for $300, bring it my way. Like, I'm not in that position. So I do get to say no, which means the work that I, or the things that I'm spending time on, I'm getting more out of, professionally, I'm growing, and they're just more fun to work on. And obviously when you're having fun, everything's good. So yeah, just as somebody who made that jump not too long ago, yeah, it's definitely easy to look back and say things are just much better. You know, sometimes I have dreams about my old job, and honestly, I wake up and it kind of ruins my morning, just like the bureaucracy and everything that went along with working in an office. And, you know, now it's sink or swim, it's all on me, and I like it that way, because I don't like to lose at stuff, so I'm going to make sure I do what I need to do to win. So just to echo pretty much what people have told you, I'll tell you and everybody listening, all 10 of you guys, thank you for listening, that it's a little more than 10, but yeah, just that, I think a lot of people are going to say that. I'd never think that there is... You're almost never going to get to a perfect, the most opportune time to, okay, you know, I have all my debt is paid off. I have a year worth of, you know, money to live on. Let's give this thing a go. But that doesn't mean be stupid and just quit your job tomorrow and do it. You definitely need to make sure that you do have some things in place. You have some plans. And also, too, you know, people don't realize how difficult it is to be the boss. And especially if you work from home, you know, if you're not working at an office or a co-working space that kind of fosters the work mentality, the work vibe, then it's really hard. You know, I have dogs in my office all the time. My daughter, you know, my daughter comes in and, you know, and so it's hard. And a lot of people don't realize that. You tell people that, hey, you know, I'm quitting my job and full-time freelancing, work for myself. And they're like, oh man, that's so awesome. Like, you're going to work in your underwear and, you know, do whatever you want. And it's like, no, because I can't afford to do that. Like, I have a routine, I have a schedule, I get up and I do everything that I need to do. But the luxuries that working for yourself, you know, those greatly outweigh the challenges of working for somebody else.
No, definitely. You're right about that.
Not that I had to convince you or anybody listening to this podcast that freelancing is a good idea. But yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people, there's just never that perfect time. So you got to make
no, jump. You're right. And that's true. Regardless of that, you're going to have to take a leap of faith. And as a millennial, that's kind of what we do. If we are working somewhere and we don't like it because of how technology has progressed, we'll say, you know what? I'll go do my own thing.
Yeah.
However, like you just cautioned, if you're going to do your own thing, you need to have a plan, or you're going to, you know, not really do well, or you'll fail and you kind of have to learn the hard way, or you'll make the jump, you'll see you didn't plan, and then you're going to have to go back.
Yep.
To get in a job, which is very hard to do, because I have a couple of friends who have done that. It was difficult for them to go back to work.
It's a big blow to the ego. I mean, it's a pretty big failure to swallow.
Yeah, definitely. So just, you have to be well thought out if you're going to make that jump. Just, it doesn't have to be, you know, planning. You have a book that's 50 pages long and you hit, okay, this is everything I'm going to do.
Yeah.
But at the least, you're going to have to say, how much money do I make? What do I spend 100% money on? Yeah. Do I need to adjust my lifestyle? As far as income, what is a realistic income goal? I can't, oh, I'm going to make 100K. Be realistic. Maybe you'll work your, maybe you'll make your salary, or maybe you'll make a little less, right? And if you're going to make the jump, name five people you can maybe work with. Hopefully you've built up some relationships to where there's something there.
Yeah.
Prior to making the jump. I know I do have a couple of recurring clients, and it's not enough, I would say, to sustain me, but it would be a good base.
Yeah.
And RJ, I know even in your case, when you made the jump, you had a couple of people who were there that you could at least use as a foundation. So
I could talk your ear off about relationships, and that's, I attribute all of my success to the relationships that I've worked on and built. And you know, that's the reason I find myself in a situation where work is coming my way instead of me having to go out and find my own clients. So yeah, 100% relationships are key, and having a couple of those, if not more, especially when you make that jump, is going to make the transition a lot easier for you.
And I'm building those relationships even now, even though some people may not realize it, because the advantage that I have in working with this large company I'm at and seeing them work with freelancers, I see a lot of mistakes they're making. Mm-hmm. I don't say anything, right? Because, you know, I'm just in the room almost like a fly on the wall, and I can literally get to hear the internal conversation of when the freelancer leaves, of what they think, what they're expecting, whether they think the person, oh, that person is cheap. I'm like, cheap? He charged you $12,000. You think that's cheap? You know, that's what I'm thinking in my head. And so really, I'm just collecting as much information as I can from the other side of it, from the client side. So I think I've even used what I've learned in my own business as well. So it's been a good position that I'm in right now, but I'm still getting certain things in order. But yeah, everything that you mentioned is true. It's going to be a step of faith. There's a learning curve a little bit, but if you plan well, you can make the jump and be successful.
Yeah, 100%. And also, just to circle back real quick, I think it's such a huge benefit for you to be able to be be part of the discussion with, and then see how the company talks about the freelancer. Because you know the work that this person did and charged $12,000 for, right? So you're probably like, if your initial response was you charge that much for it, that's something that I could do. I think especially when it comes to relationships, what I attribute my lasting relationships to is just really, really taking pride in what I do. I think there's just, and I'm not going to go, I could definitely stand on my soapbox and talk a long time about this, but I think there's a very large lack of pride that people take in the work they do. Whether you work in tech, whether you work at the drive-thru at McDonald's, I can't tell you how frustrating it is for me to get home, you know, and they messed up the order. You know, just the lack of pride that people take in what they do, especially as a freelancer, that has won me over with other people because of the details that I sweat that other freelancers don't, or the quality that I put into my work that other freelancers don't. That's why people continue to come back to me as opposed to working with somebody who's probably cheaper. But, you know, you probably already see that in, you know, being the fly on the wall in those rooms, that, you know, clients a lot of times in using freelancers, unless they're established, they don't necessarily wow. You know, a lot of freelancers, I think, have the mentality of, you know, I deserve this job, instead of thinking it like, hey, I'm on my own. The fact that I have this job, each job you do is an opportunity. Each project that, or each conversation you have with the client is an opportunity. You know, even when people call me, and I deal mostly with agencies, so they send the work my way. I don't do a lot of client acquisition for myself, other than the, you know, two or three throughout the year. But when people do call me, a lot of people, you know, they want to pay $500 and have me customize the scene that they set up. I don't do that stuff anymore. But what I do is I talk to them and, you know, learn about their budget, what they're wanting, and coach them on, hey, you know, you have a good budget in mind. This is who you're looking for. I'd go here to look for them, and you provide that value. Because what happens is, in a couple cases, those people have come back to me and said, you know what? I know that I want to do this originally, and I know you only do stuff from scratch, but I think we want to go with you, because you provide them that value. You take it as an opportunity. And when you take advantage of that opportunity, it typically lends to more work. So yeah, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you and record it and let people hear what you have to say is, I don't know if a series is the right word or not, but a lot of your, probably the past month or so, you've been talking a lot about pricing strategies and stuff for freelancers. And I think especially those who are looking to make the jump, or have recently made the jump, or are just getting into freelancing. Pricing is hard because, you know, like we've already kind of gotten across, as a freelancer, everything's up to you. You're the one that makes the decisions. And when it comes to pricing, I think a lot of us fall into imposter syndrome a little bit, and we don't know how to value our work. And we typically err against ourselves in giving a price that is probably lower than what we feel we deserve. So there's a couple of things specifically that I wanted to talk about that you've recently talked about, and I'll get some links for the show notes so we can point people to you, and I'll let you plug yourself at the end of our talk here. But definitely check out what Nathan has been talking about pricing wise. And one of the main things I want to touch on and kind of just, you know, hear what you have to say about it is hourly versus project pricing. Because especially when clients come to you, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll say, you know, hey, what's your hourly rate or whatever. I hate working hourly because honestly, and the reason I hate working hourly is because I'm a constant learner. I'm 100% self-taught, just like you, and trying to figure stuff out. And I like knowing stuff. I like getting better. Like I said, I don't like to lose. So, you know, if I look at a site that I'm like, wow, that site looks awesome, it works great, and then I compare it to something I did and it's like, oh man, this is just much better, I'm going to do what I can to close that gap. In working that way, I punish myself by charging hourly, because something that used to take me 15 hours to do now can take me 5 hours to do. And even if I up my hourly rate, that's a big discrepancy. So I always like doing per project pricing. What are your thoughts? What do you feel as a freelancer people need to consider in kind of moving away from the idea of hourly pricing into project pricing?
No, definitely. And I will say, when it comes to hourly versus project, you have to understand in what situation is either one the most appropriate.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm like you. I don't like hourly pricing. It reminds me of when I worked at McDonald's. And you might have seen that video, but I worked at McDonald's over 4.5 years when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I learned everything and became very good at my job. And I assumed everybody knew math, but not everyone does. So I'm being serious. So knowing math was a value that I brought because I was never really short on my cash register. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were. So, you know, if you're short, that means you're giving away too much money to people, right, and the company is losing money. So that's a value, but all the value that I brought to the table, it's not like I was being rewarded with hourly pay because you're giving it, you know, you're basing our value off of our time.
Yes.
But I'm obviously more efficient than somebody, but you're not really going to pay me, like you said, a high rate. So when it comes to hourly versus project, I lean towards project-based pricing for the reason, one reason that you said already is it doesn't necessarily value your time well. And if you're any type of freelancer who is working to get better, you're going to try to be more efficient. You're going to try to produce the same amount of quality, maybe in a less amount of time. But there's no value for that in hourly, you know, pricing. You can charge, let's just say you're charging $100 an hour and you finish something in 3 hours. Okay, $300. But the next time you finish it in an hour and a half. But you produce the same amount of value, but you're getting paid less. That really doesn't make a lot of sense. The only time that I would really recommend, if not use hourly pricing, is if you've been through the process so many times and you fully understand how long it's going to take you, including client meetings, including revisions, including just in case something happens to you personally, like you get sick, yeah, and you're out for a couple of days. If you're really able to evaluate how much time it takes for you to finish a certain job, then maybe you can say, this is my hourly rate. Mm-hmm. Maybe. And that takes you really going through the process multiple times and timing yourself for everything.
Yeah.
Time yourself, you know, if you're playing on Facebook, you have to time that too, because yeah, that's time you're not working. So you have to time yourself for every little thing you do, whether it's write an email, whether it's a phone call with a client, whether it is, okay, you're doing research, you're looking, maybe you're looking for imagery that you're going to use on a website, you're searching iStock or some other service. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to start by editing a theme, so you're looking through themes to work with. I'm not sure what it may be, but you're going to have to time yourself for every little thing you do and then ask yourself, what is a realistic hourly rate? Mm-hmm. But even with that, most people don't take that step. So I would definitely recommend not even using hourly. Now, if you're just beginning, because you're in the research phase, okay, if you want to use hourly, I'm pretty sure you're going to learn a whole bunch of reasons of why you shouldn't, yeah, use that hourly rate. But a per project basis is so much better because it reduces risk for you and it reduces risk for the client. Clients want to know, how much does it cost? When you have an hourly rate, they're going to look for ways to try to make your time shorter.
Yep.
They're also going to look for ways to say, okay, I hope this person doesn't exceed a certain amount of hours because then we'll be over budget.
Right.
But if you can give a flat per project price, they can see it, they can digest it, and then ask themselves if they want to pay it. Now, you can work out payment terms as far as, you know, give me 25% up front and then at this milestone. So you can work out the payment different ways, but a flat fee is so much better than that hourly rate. I only know of literally one person I can think of that is probably winning with an hourly rate because they don't mind how long it takes. They just want him to do the work.
Yeah.
One person out of all the freelancers I know is actually winning because he said, this is my hourly rate. And they say, okay, just send us the invoice.
Yeah.
That doesn't really happen to a lot of freelancers to where they don't care how much time you take. So yeah.
I like what you had to say too. I mean, a flat project amount or flat rate, whatever it is, it provides more clarity for everybody. So you know right up front, you know, there's not a lot of guessing, because even if we don't want it to be the case, it's always a cat and mouse game when it comes to client and freelancer. You know, the client needs work done that they don't have somebody in-house to do. So that's the benefit of a freelancer that you provide. But the client doesn't want to spend, you know, they want to spend as little as possible. So especially when you're starting out, I would probably say to start out, actually recommend doing hourly, because you're going to learn lessons the hard way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come up with your hourly rate. I remember mine for the longest time was $20 an hour, which you can't, like, that is a very low rate when it comes to freelancing, because I was the school of thought of, this is how much I make for my job as an hourly employee.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So to me, $20, man, I just gave myself a raise. But in reality, you know, that's not the case, because if I do something that took me 5 hours, you know, throughout the week to do a project, that's much lower than had I worked a full week of my hourly rate at my job. And so it's good to kind of struggle through that at the beginning, because you learn, you remember, right? So just like you were saying, that if you were to remain hourly, you really have to pay attention to everything that you spend your time on. And you really have to get to a point where you've done it enough times to where you can confidently say, I know this is going to take me X amount of time to do, and hourly works out for you. And you don't get to that point unless you've gone through a number of things, you've learned from past mistakes. So hourly is typically good to start out with. And to transition from hourly into project, or even if you want to start off with project-based pricing, break it down in terms of hours. Really give some thought. You know, I need to, you know, for me, I do mostly development. So I know for development, a basic site, you know, let's just say it takes me 5 hours to do. So what do I want to give project-based? Well, if I feel that $25 is fair, then I could charge $25 an hour based on the 5 hours I think it's going to take me. That's $125 that I could give the client, right? So you're still using your hourly rate in a sense, but you're actually providing the client with project-based. So you can kind of test the transition from hourly to project. Is pretty easy, because you can use your hourly rate, what you feel is fair, to create your project-based fees. But when it comes to project-based fees, you need to be aware too the time that it takes you, but also as your quality improves, to up that price. I think a lot of people sit stagnant with their pricing for a while. You know, there's some people that I've had the luxury of working with for, you know, about 6 years now. And we've only kind of changed pricing 2 times throughout our relationship. And both of them were kind of met with, there was a little bit of a standoff. Like, why are we raising prices? And, you know, I had to explain, well, you know, here's how I used to build websites, and now here's how I build websites now. You know, you can see the difference. They're much easier to use on your end, and stuff like that. So you have to make sure that when you do transition into project-based pricing, you don't sit stagnant at one price. You need to be aware and also test the waters of continually upping your price. Obviously, only if it's deserved in the sense of better quality or larger scale or whatever. But a lot of people, a lot of freelancers sit stagnant in terms of, you're going to charge me $1,000 to do this, and I can take that rate to the bank for the next 10 years. Like, if you're still charging the same thing that you were charging for 10 years ago, then you're definitely doing something wrong.
You also brought up an interesting point as well when you talked about raising your rates. When it comes to hourly-based pricing, everybody has a red flag in their mind where they're going to look and say no.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, hey, my rate is $75 an hour. Then you say, okay, I want to increase it. Then you say 100. Then you say 200. Then you say, you know, 500. And they're like, $500 an hour? It's going to set off a red flag in the client's mind. You don't know what that red flag is.
Right.
Because they can't fully grasp all the value that is contained with your hourly rate. All they have to evaluate it on is $500 an hour. How long is it going to take him?
Yeah.
If it takes you a long time, it's expensive. If it takes you a short amount of time, did he just charge me $2,000 for 2 hours of work?
Yeah.
Some people just cannot process that, because the only point of reference they have is how much they have made hourly.
Yeah.
And some people do not feel comfortable paying $1,000 per hour when they've never made that in their life.
Right. No, that's a great point. And yeah, they get that sticker shock, and it's like, mm-hmm. you know, how can you even fathom, you know, $1,000 an hour? That's just unimaginable. And I think that also too is you have to be aware of the industry that you work within. Now, you know, obviously I'm a developer. You know, I know that you do design development and the digital marketing stuff. You need to be aware, because I think that the industry that we kind of run in, you said it better than I'm going to say it now earlier when you said that, you know, they don't know what to expect because they don't know how this stuff works or how you do what you do. I call it a lack of respect for what we do, but I might be a little bit jaded or bitter about it. So the parallel that I usually draw is, think of like you're remodeling your kitchen, right? And so you know that when you hire a contractor, like contractors are not cheap. You know that when they come in and they do stuff and you have a plan that you agree upon, and then you decide, you know what? What would it be like if we put the sink 6 inches to the right? You know, you understand that they're going to have to recut the countertop, reposition some piping, maybe change some cabinets around, and that's going to be expensive. Whereas in our industry, you ask them to, you know, move something over to the right side from the left side. Sure, we don't have to do a lot of physical labor, and sometimes those changes can be quick. But in the customer's mind, because they don't know, they don't see what you're doing, and they don't understand it like they can understand brick and mortar things that are being built, they don't expect to be charged for stuff like that. And I think that's where project pricing comes in to kind of save you a little bit as well.
And just to piggyback a little bit of what you just said, and this is something that I've realized that I was not doing as a freelancer, and now I'm trying to do a better job and, you know, continue that trend. And what I'm referring to is, you need to get credit for everything that it is you're doing.
Yeah.
So when some people just see a price, what does that mean? Yeah. Right. You know, I know for me, I like cars. Who doesn't like driving in a nice car? But there's cars that are 20,000 and there's cars that are 200,000.
Yep.
At the end of the day, they're both cars. So you don't want the client just to use their own frame of reference. You have to frame it for them.
Yes.
Which is what a lot of good automobile companies do in their marketing. We saw all their commercials during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they framed the value, even if it wasn't the car's performance. It might be lifestyle, it might be family, it might be something else. So as a freelancer, you have to frame what the value is. So don't just give a price, but you have to give a price and inform, sometimes educate the client on what that actually means.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I know something that I've been working on and trying to do a better job with is, if I say, yes, I can do this website for you, I'm going to explain a little bit behind my process and give some reasons why I'm making certain decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Not to get their approval, but to get them to understand that I am going above and beyond the average person. So for example, I may say, I'm going to set you up on here. I'm going to set you up on WordPress. Why am I setting you up on WordPress? So that you can make edits to the website yourself and you don't have to call me for every little thing. Oh, okay. Some people don't. They're like, WordPress, who cares?
Yeah.
So you have to explain why you're doing that. Also, I may say, you said you wanted a blog. So I'm setting it up on WordPress because they're one of the leaders in blogging platforms and one is already native to the code. So that's why I'm setting you up on WordPress, because you wanted a blog. Mm-hmm. Or whatever it may be, just a little explanation for the decisions you're making.
Yeah.
So that you get credit for your expertise, but also a little bit of credit for why you're charging what you're charging. Because some people just give a price, do the work, and move on.
Yeah, 100%.
But you're going above and beyond by saying, I want to partner with you and I want you to do well. So I took a lot of care into making these decisions. And really, at the end of the day, you'll probably find out I probably should have charged more, but I'm not, because I really care about you being successful as a client.
Yeah, I think that's great. And honestly, I use a car analogy I use to get that point across is, you know, you may pay $15,000 for a Kia and $80,000 for a Mercedes. And there's a difference. And just the reason you pay more for a Mercedes is just something as simple as closing a car door. When you close, you know, and Kia's come a long way in their cars, but I had a cheap Kia back in the day. And when I would close that door, it was like bang, like it was it was loud and stuff. But you close, you know, a BMW, a Mercedes, you know, a Lexus, whatever, it's that nice kind of just, I can't make the sound effect, but it's just a much quieter, it's a much more solid connection than on a Kia or any low budget car. And so that, you know, that's part of the reason, right? Because the engineers took care in how everything was lined up, how the, you know, the lining between the door and the car frame, like there's a lot of thought that goes into that little detail, you know, something as simple as what sound does the car make when you close the door. That's the difference between $20,000 and $80,000 or $100,000 car. And that's, you know, what you just described, that's how you are able to charge more, because of the details that you take into account and make sure are dealt with accordingly based on what the client needs. Because a lot of people don't do that, especially freelancers. A lot of freelancers, just like what you said, they get the money, they do the work, and then they're gone. And it's the least amount of effort possible. And then they're left with a loud website that bangs when you close it.
Yeah, we can go all day on the car analogies. Yeah. I'm just going to say this as a quick sidebar as far as the car. If you notice what car companies are doing, they want to work with as many people as they can. So they make different models and they make different types of vehicles to cater to each segment of the market. So if you have a high budget, if you're willing to spend a lot of money, or you don't have a lot of money, they make something tailored for you. As a freelancer, it's a little different because you're offering, you know, top value for what you're providing. But you may need to ask yourself, what can I actually make that may help someone on a lower level? Mm-hmm. If you're just that freelancer who maybe you're scared of people being intimidated by your price, okay, when you present a solution to a client, go with more than just one option, right? Say, I can do this work for you, and the price is going to be $10,000. However, if you're worried about them thinking about the price, but you can say, however, I can also do these things for you and not include this one thing, and it's $7,000. Now, normally, I never used to do that because I'm like, I want the whole value for what I'm doing. I don't want to do that. But I even did a video about it, too. I'm starting to do that now because it changes the client's mind to focus on what they're going to choose instead of whether or not they want to work with me. So they're no longer thinking about $10,000. That's too much. I can't work with Nathan. It becomes, okay, which one should I do? 10,000 or 7,000? And I'm increasing my chances of winning the project. So if you're worried about someone looking at your price and being intimidated, because as time goes by, your price should be getting higher anyway, assuming you're getting better as a freelancer. But if you're intimidated by that, give the client options. You know, hey, I can build this for you on WordPress. But hey, if that's not going to work for you, I can maybe work with you on Squarespace. Mm-hmm. I never used to do that, but that's something that I do now. And there's different time investments based upon the option. But that's something that freelancers can consider when it comes to pricing. And that's still per project, right? It just becomes options on what they want to do for their project.
Right. Yeah, that's a great – I think that idea is a good kind of culmination of what we've talked about pricing-wise. And that is that it doesn't have to be here's what I would charge to do it. Because just like you said, it turns the client into, well, do we want to pay that and work with them, or do we want to try something else? As opposed to, you said that you wanted to accomplish X. Well, I can do, you know, this, this, or that to help you accomplish X. And each one goes a little bit more in depth, and each one costs a little bit more. And just like you said, it turns them around to thinking, okay, well, which one do I want to choose, as opposed to choose you or not choose you? So you're more likely to get the project. Also, too, it does something that will be very beneficial for you as you go through the project. And that is, when they come back, because clients always do, no matter how awesome they are, they will always come back and ask for more. It's easier for you to say, you know what, that's not a problem. That actually was included in the top level option that I gave you. So we can do that. And since we already discussed pricing, it's just going to be X amount more. It puts you in a much better situation to handle scope creep than if you, here's, you know, 10,000 is the price, and, you know, X, I'll do X, Y, and Z or whatever. It's harder to combat that unless you really nail down the scope of work. And I think that that is, I'll call that like an advanced level of freelancing, pricing. So, you know, you start off hourly, that's the beginner. That's the, you know, you're new and you're going to struggle a little bit until you learn that, okay, now I'm going to graduate into project-based pricing. And that's the intermediate level. But then you get smart and you say, it doesn't need to be, you know, I mentioned kind of a cat and mouse game earlier between you and the client. And that's usually how it comes down to money, and the per project fee you're charging. So instead of just making it yes or no, you obviously, it's still a yes or no, but it's yes to a particular package and no to the other packages, instead of yes or no just to you. So you hit that advanced level. That's something that, honestly, just this year, as I'm talking with the people that I work with and the agencies that I work with, trying to give them more tools to go out and sell sites, is that there's no reason for, you know, you to lose out on a smaller project as long as that project scope is smaller. So just an example is, I'm testing something with an agency that I work with to where for people that want more basic websites, we're going to attempt to do something that has a small setup fee and then a monthly fee. So they don't pay all that bulk up front, but there's that residual. So over time, you actually end up making more money than you would if you did something all up front for them. It's just residual income that comes through, which in my opinion is the holy grail for freelancers. But I think that's a good place to kind of wrap it up with that idea of giving the customer options. Pricing is hard. Everything that we've talked about, you know, some things have worked for us. We've told you what hasn't worked for us and how we kind of started out and where we're at now. But it also comes down to what you feel comfortable with. When it comes to talking money, a lot of people, it's a taboo subject. And so you don't want to get caught up in those details. But as a freelancer, as somebody who lives and breathes based on the projects that they get, it's so crucial that you are confident in not only the work that you're doing, but the money you're charging for it, because you don't want to find yourself in a situation where you're stuck, you know, doing crappy projects with crappy budgets. You want to get to a place, you know, just like you mentioned, you're like, that guy's charging 12 grand for this. You know, that's a place where I wish all my projects were at. I wish my base price was 12 grand, but that's not the case. But as you learn, as you grow, as you gain that confidence in yourself and your ability, it's much easier to talk about price from a confidence standpoint, as opposed to kind of timid, because you're like, I'm going to say a price and I hope you think it's okay, instead of saying, this is what I charge for X. And when you're a freelancer and you get to that point, things start to shift upwards at a much larger click, I guess, than when you're just kind of that timid, like, oh, I hope they go for this type situation.
Definitely, definitely. And just to piggyback on that as well, it's confidence also, mm-hmm. right? Even when I mentioned somebody saying, yes, we can do this for you for 20,000, they don't say that nervously.
Right.
You know, because you can present the price. It's up to the client as an individual to decide if they want to pay that or not. You know, I really tell people, charge what you feel is value. Now, don't get greedy, but charge what you feel is the value for it. the person should decide, who are they to say it's too much or it's too little?
Right.
They can decide whether they want to use you or not, or they can decide to say, that's too expensive, I'll find somebody else. Okay. You know, that's, it's possible. You know, it's possible to speak with confidence in that and not feel any type of way about that. You know, to be honest, if you think about it, a lot of people who have been CEOs for technology companies, they may leave one company and go to another. They say, yeah, my salary should be $2 million. They don't say that nervously.
Right.
You know, they just say $2 million. And you're like, $2
million? Yeah.
But to them, they're like, I've been paid more in the past. So,
yeah.
You know, so it comes down to confidence, but that comes over time. And that also comes with understanding your value.
Yeah.
I learned that personally the hard way. I worked with a client. And I didn't want to lose it. I didn't want to lose the opportunity to do work. So I just told them, I'll do this WordPress-based site for $2,000. And then I did it, and I was done. But then I saw other websites that were out there that looked very similar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was like, I wonder if they just copied me. I don't know. But it looked very similar. So I contacted those companies and said, how much would you charge for a website like this? And I showed them the website I built. Now, they didn't know I built it. And they were, one company said, oh, $5,000. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, yeah, let me think about it. I'll get back to you. Contacted an agency.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked the agency, they said no less than $10,000.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, all three of us were doing the same deliverable.
Yep.
The only difference was perception. People tend to perceive agencies as having more expertise at their disposal,
mm-hmm.
when that's not always true, because a lot of times they go grab freelancers like RJ.
Yeah, that's my bread and butter right there.
I mean, it's not a secret,
right.
You know, but they go grab freelancers like RJ who do the work anyway, and they move on down the road. So it's perception. And then for the other company, they were a little more, I would say, yeah, they're more established than I was, and they had been in existence longer as well. So it all has to do with perception, and perception is reality. If you give a price and somebody is shocked and they think it's too expensive, you have to ask yourself, have I been portraying a certain attitude, a certain mood, or a certain presentation in my work? Have I been presenting the right way so that when they see this, they agree with the price?
Yeah.
Or do they get nervous? If they get nervous, I would have to ask myself, maybe I'm not presenting myself the right way. So I'd look at my portfolio. I'd look at maybe how I was talking to them on a phone conversation, whatever it is I need to do or change to change the perception to when I say, I can build that for you for $10,000. They say, oh, okay. Because they like, trust, or believe me.
Yeah.
And I've given them evidence that I can do a good job. So that's another thing as well, perception. What perceptions are you giving as a freelancer? Are you at home in your pajamas? You know, you you show up to a meeting with pizza stains on your shirt and you say, I can do this site for $20,000. They're going to say, well, please. But if you go to a meeting, you know, you're portraying that you're creative. You're showing that you're invested. You know, you're very polished in your work.
Yeah.
People can see that throughout time in your portfolio that you have progressed and become a better person, and you get better with each project. If you're giving out that perception, it will match what your pricing will be, and they won't, you know, shy away from that.
Yeah, 100%. Nathan, big thanks. I'm glad we got to connect here. Like I said, I'm a fan of you and what you do with your podcasts. I catch it on YouTube, but you have an audio version as well, right?
Yeah, I'm actually going back and adding that to iTunes because I didn't have an audio version. I have on iTunes is also video.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
So they're both, it's a video podcast on iTunes and it's on YouTube. But I'm literally going back and adding the audio as well,
yeah,
because not everybody can watch something, right? It might be better to hear.
Yeah,
so
podcasts are in my car, so that's probably not safe for me to try to watch.
Exactly.
You. Yeah.
Exactly. So I am turning that into an audio podcast, and you'll be seeing that shortly.
All right, cool. So what is the title of your podcast? Where can people find out more about you and what you're about?
Definitely. You can go to freelancejumpstart.tv. Once you go there, it'll take you to the direct location on my website that is dedicated to Freelance Jumpstart TV. So you'll see videos, but you'll also see notes, even some worksheets that go along with every video that I've made, just so that you can implement the advice I'm giving in your business. So it's freelancejumpstart.tv. Also, if you go on YouTube, you can search that on YouTube or find me on YouTube specifically, youtube.com/NathanAlote, and you get directly to the video content. And because I was honored that you would have me on the show, I also made a special link just for listeners of this podcast. So if you wanted to visit NathanAlote.com/RJ, you can go to a section of my site that's dedicated to this episode and some of the conversation that we talked about today.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you for that. Big thanks again. People definitely go check out his site, his podcast, a lot of good stuff coming out. And it's always good too. I mean, like I said, just because you're not a full-time freelancer and I am a full-time freelancer does not, I've learned a bunch from you. And it's like, it's the mindset, I think, is the biggest struggle to keep a freelancer in the right mindset consistently. You know, just because, you know, you have a lot of experience over the years, I have a lot of experience over the years, but sometimes even if you know something, it's good to hear it again. So definitely go check out what he has to say. Big thanks again for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on again and talk about something else.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you.
All right, man.
All right, thanks.
Right there.